Well, just the way they drew it up, right? Never in doubt. The Blue Jays win 4-3. They walk the tightrope virtually all game long. Runners on second and third, just one out in the bottom of the ninth inning. Jordan Romano finds it in the nth hour, the witching hour. He slams the door. Boy, 4-3, the Blue Jays win. The bullpen overall actually managing to provide three innings of scoreless relief at the end of the game in Cincy. But I think I speak for many of you guys when I say this, but I think I need a stiffer drink than water tonight, let me tell you. Welcome to Jays Talk across the Sportsnet Radio Network, streaming live on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Show Ali here with you, taking your calls and texts. Phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cellular device, 590-590, of course, is where you can text me. That's the people's text line, and it is, as I like to say, always open. You know, someone actually DM'd me on Twitter, or X, I guess now, but this was last night after the loss. But all the DM said, this was after Jays Talk wrapped up yesterday, but all the DM said was, if you don't like that game, then show you don't like 2023 Toronto Blue Jays baseball. And it made me kind of laugh because my only reply to that, and I think it remains sometimes the same, is that maybe sometimes I don't always like it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I grew up a fan of this team. It makes my job more fun when they win. But boy, they are white knuckling it to the finish line. Tightrope walking, whatever you want to call it. It happens a lot this year, but hey, you know what? More positives tonight than negatives after they grab a win, even if it may have been by the skin of their teeth. You know, but really quickly, before we talk about, I wanted to start with Bassett in the bullpen. And certainly we'll talk about the offense and so on. David Schneider hitting another home run, which is great to see. Paul DeJong getting DFA'd. Thoughts on Bo Bichette. There's a lot to get to tonight. But I just wanted to start with that Ellie De La Cruz, I guess, triple that was not an inside the park home run. It was, of course, very impressive. Like, there is no doubt about it. Like, how can a guy that tall also be that fast? It's a little silly, frankly. And Ellie De La Cruz was the guy I was actually most looking forward to watching on the Cincy side of things with this series on the docket. Jonathan India actually was the second guy because I have him on my fantasy team. And of course he's like out until late September. So that's neither here nor there, but boy, that play, a comedy of errors on that play. And he actually still came back out for a curtain call from the Reds crowd. Actually, I don't have an issue with it. I saw some people on X. I got to get used to saying that. I saw some people on social basically saying, how could he come back out and pander? I mean, come on. You're at home. Let the guy have some fun. But still, it did. I will see the humor in that. It did make me chuckle that after it was ruled a triple and an error, he still came back and waved to the crowd. But I mean, how often does that happen, right? Actually, the double that was maybe, what, inches from being a home run after that might have been almost as impressive considering he was following up his insane sprint speed. It actually does make me think, I wonder what kind of events you could make up for the All-Star game just to have a little more oomph, like, you know, tracking, like things like the skills competition, like in the NBA where they, you know, do the pass, shoot, dribble thing, like tracking first to home times with guys sprint speed, like De La Cruz probably would be pretty fun to watch there, or, you know, most accurate throws from the outfield to first, second, or third. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Varsho or Kiermaier there. But anyways, guys like Ellie De La Cruz, I think, are good for baseball, even if it was rightly not called an inside-the-park home run today. But the Blue Jays, despite that just awful sequence of events, terrible, you know, sequence of events, guys picking up the ball, fielding the ball in the outfield with Biggio out there, missing the cutoff guy, people missing the ball in the infield, a late shovel throw to the plate with De La Cruz rounding third. I don't know. It was just a comedy of errors, as Ben Shulman correctly referred to it as. But hey, the Blue Jays overcome and they do win 4-3. Chris Bassett, of course, was a huge part about of this win, a 4-3 win, six innings pitched, three hits, three runs, two of which were earned, of course, because of the error we just discussed. One walk, six strikeouts, and he gave up one home run on 79 pitches. Of course, the home run to lead off the fourth inning from TJ Friedl. He looked great. Bassett, I think, was perfect through the first three innings. Like we said, Friedl breaks it up with a home run in the bottom of the fourth. And then, yes, the truly awful sequence of events with Biggio and De La Cruz. But you know what? Even after that, I always feel like Bassett, I don't know if you guys feel differently about this, but whenever I see Bassett like actually physically stand there on the mound, when things are like in danger of unraveling, even he has been so good for basically, I would say like 80% of his starts this year. He always kind of looks like he is 1 second away from just having a complete meltdown. I think that's just how he looks because he pitches so well so often, but he got the outs he needed for pretty much the rest of his appearance, right? He wrapped up that fourth inning without any further damage. He called for a very, very heavy dose of sinkers and cutters, as he usually does, the entire game. Like in the end, he threw 79 pitches. He threw the sinker 49.4% of the time, the cutter 12.7% of the time, and the curveball 10.1% of the time. So a lot of off-speed and breaking stuff being used by Bassett as usual today, and he largely looked really, really good doing it. So outside of some of the bad stuff in that fourth inning, I would say Bassett was pretty darn good today. I got to give him the credit for it. The bullpen, certainly. Trevor Richards getting somewhat of a rude welcome back today. Only gets the one out before getting yanked. So still need him to work back into form, certainly. Tim Mayza comes in, and even though the bases are juiced with the nine-hitter Stuart Fairchild reaching on a walk, he does get Friedel in the lefty-on-lefty matchup to swing for out number three in that inning to strand the bases loaded. So great stuff from Mayza after, I think it was the last time out, or at least very recently, we saw Mayza give up three straight hits and then get lifted, right? So good to see him leave a ton of inherited runners on base, including his own runner that he walked in Friedel. And then you have Jordan Hicks. And I see a lot of texts on Jordan Hicks vis-a-vis Jordan Romano, and we'll get to those in a second here before we go to the phones. But Jordan Hicks against Matt McClain, Ellie De La Cruz, and Spencer Steer, the three scariest bats on this team, throws nothing but heat. Like, sinkers the entire way in the bottom of the eighth inning. He threw 14 pitches. They were 14 sinkers. And I Ben and Blake talked about this on the broadcast, but I do wonder if that is a direct result of him getting got on the sweeper yesterday. Because we had a lot of texts and some callers last night saying, hey, like, what is Jordan Hicks doing? Why is he throwing a low velocity sweeper when you know he can throw just absolute filthy heat? This kind of like why you went out and got him. John Schneider in the past has literally gone out to say, hey, look, you got Yusei Kikuchi, and then you can go Jimmy Garcia, Jordan Hicks, Jordan Romano. Like, you, all you do is get heat from those guys, and then you get the low velo pitches. Obviously, you kind of, and we talked about this yesterday, you kind of got to see some off-speed stuff just to keep the guys honest here and there. But, boy, we didn't see a lot of it yesterday, and it does somewhat feel like that is a big part of why he did go 14 sweepers, pardon me, 14 sweepers, can you imagine? 14 sinkers in 14 pitches today. But it's just, look, it's just filthy to see him reach 103 on the radar gun, because there's just not much you can do there when he is hurling that pitch, specifically with accuracy, because that was the big bugaboo with Hicks, right? I remember Blair and Barker were talking about this when they were doing J-Stock when the trade broke, but it was the whole thing with him was that he has nasty stuff, but sometimes kind of sprays it a little bit all over the strike zone, sometimes not in the zone. And today, very accurate, and it was great to see. Now, okay, I wanted to get to these texts here very quickly from the text line. Again, 590-590, name and location. I see one. There's some simple ones, actually. This one's very simple from Vincent Aurora. He just says, Hicks in, Romano out. And Jay from Regina, why was Hicks not brought out for the ninth? I know Romano is your closer, but Hicks had his elite stuff. You need to win this game. If Schneider wants to ride the hot bats, why not ride the hot pitcher? And tonight, that was Hicks. Now, look, I do understand because, again, like we're talking about, Hicks looks like filthy, like just absolutely filthy tonight. So I do understand the impetus to say, oh, okay, maybe you should have just brought him back out. Having said that, it wasn't that long ago that we were all discussing and I'm not saying Jay or Vince were necessarily the ones leading the charge for this, because I admit I don't entirely remember, but you know, the simple idea was that Hicks had struggled a little bit with some accuracy. I remember when he was against, I think it was the Guardians in Cleveland, and he was kind of spraying balls all over the place, and Jansen is moving left, right, and center to block balls from getting past him and runs potentially coming in to score from third. Obviously, that did not happen in that particular game, but it's just, I remember when the conversation was surrounding that part of the Hicks discourse, let's call it, it was kind of like, oh, well, maybe Hicks is quote-unquote only a high-leverage guy. And then, of course, Jordan Romano was injured, so you're kind of thinking, okay, maybe there is some room for Hicks to get in here. But you know what? In his last appearance prior to tonight, Jordan Romano came in that 2-1 win over the Phillies, and he slammed the door. He had two strikeouts in an inning, right? He was phenomenal. I think he only threw 11 pitches. 8 of them were strikes against the Phillies, so I don't know. Like, yes, he looked a little erratic today. There's no doubt about it. Certainly erratic, but I don't know. Even that, despite the struggles, he found it late enough and found the pinpoint accuracy with the slider instead of with the fastball that, you know what, after he misses badly to Votto, he grooves the pitch middle. That was a single. Could have been a lot worse considering where he placed that. And then, of course, he gets Tyler Stevenson, Henry Ramos, and then the game ends shortly after that. I don't think one great outing for Hicks and one so outing for Romano, despite him slamming the door, necessarily means we should kind of invert those roles. But I do think it's worth revisiting if such a thing still continues to happen. But I think it would take, at least for me, it would take a lot more than just one game. Okay, let's go to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590. *590 on your cellular device. Let's go back to Aaron, who joined us yesterday. Aaron from Sydney. What's on your mind, Aaron?
Hey, show. Listen, I'm really happy they squeaked that one out. I'm calling really just to, on behalf of all the fans that share my feelings about Schneider, feeling very validated that he was in the lineup. I think we probably could have squeaked out a couple more close victories if he was included a little bit more in the last couple of weeks. But yeah, it was just so good to see him back in there and just to be that power threat. My question that I have for you, though, is about next year in regards to between Chapman and Witt. I see the Jays having to make a choice between the two. In my view, I think we need to keep Witt and probably let Chapman go. We have options at third base and Aurelvis Martinez, Addison Barger, even Biggio, if you want to put Schneider in at second base. And I think 1 year of Witt next year versus, 5-6 years of Chapman, I think is a better way for us to go and see the money maybe being spent on another power hitting outfielder. What are your thoughts on that?
Hey, Aaron, I appreciate the call. Thank you for calling in all the way from Sydney. Yeah, absolutely. So first, let's do the Davis Schneider thing first. Absolutely agree. Yesterday, I said that it was perhaps the conventional thought to send down Schneider and keep Espinal. And I freely admit, when it comes to Paul DeJong, who was DFA'd, in case you missed it, we had collectively discussed this last night. And I largely said DeJong was my choice to be sent down, but that it would not happen because he was out of options. And I admit I didn't even consider him being DFA'd because it kind of felt like we have seen other guys hang around for much longer. And DeJong did provide something of value with his glove, for example. And like in the same way that like Bradley Zimmer hung around for a long time because he could pinch run and be a defensive replacement and so on. And he did do that a lot last year before he was eventually DFA'd, of course. But it does to me say they certainly value both Espinal and Schneider more than they want to bring up anyone from the minors, at least right now. And to Aaron's point, both of these guys immediately proving the team right for keeping them. Santiago Espinal had some good ABs early on today, so you should give him some credit where it's due. And like Aaron's saying, Davis Schneider clubbing a home run. Yes, he struck out 3 times as well, but it is good to see both of those guys in their own ways reward the faith in them more or less right away. To the other half of Aaron's point, though, discussing what happens next year with second and third, it's going to be a really, I think, really different team next year, at the very least when it comes to all the potential free agents that are going to go, right? I mean, in theory, I'm not saying they're all necessarily a fait accompli gone, but all of Belt, Kiermaier, Chapman, Merrifield, and if you look at some of the pitchers as well, like Hyunjin Ryu, for example, like all of these guys could, in theory, no longer be on the team. I think it's likely at least like one or two of them remain on the team. And I would agree with Aaron, and I think you, Aaron, probably speak for a lot of Blue Jays fans, and that you would probably rather see Witt over Chapman, not because Chapman is a bad player. And I think in his very brief absence, certainly defensively, I think we kind of saw why you value Chapman so much when you have guys like Espinal booting some throws from third to first, which is oddly one of the things he himself solved when Espinal came into that position before Chapman was a Blue Jay, right? But anyways, Offensively, certainly, I think if you could only pick one, I almost certainly would pick Merrifield, even though he is a little bit older. It kind of goes back to that discussion we had a little while ago in the sense of what do you do, with Merrifield contract wise, right? Like what do you do with him knowing that it's a mutual option for $18 million? If he opts in and the Blue Jays decline the option, then he gets paid, I believe, $500K, which is not a bad payday for them saying, hey, we don't want you to play for our team. Maybe that could be like a little handshake agreement that they decline, he opts in, they decline, and then he still gets re-signed to a longer term deal. I could see teams doing that, and I could very easily see the Blue Jays certainly doing it as well. But if you're picking between the two, I gotta think that Chapman is gone, right? Like he's also a Scott Boras client and they very notoriously test free agency. And the other thing is, if you look at the free agent class of this coming off season, and this includes guys who can opt out of contracts like a Marcus Stroman or I think Julio Urias, for example, might be just a straight up UFA. I'm not sure if he has options, but there's quite a long list of potential free agents. But if you just take out the pitchers, and then, of course, if you take out Shohei Ohtani, who is just like as a separate category all on his own, and you just look at the position players not named Shohei Ohtani, and I mean, he's kind of a DH anyways, but still, he's his own category. You look at the position players outside of him, Matt Chapman might very well be the best available free agent on the market. So to Aaron's point, he's going to command a bazillion dollars is what I'm saying. Like, and that doesn't mean that the Blue Jays are not going to pay him that money. It just kind of feels likely that another team that's very needy at third base could pay him more than any other team is willing to pay. Like, couldn't you all just see, I don't know, the Angels paying him a bazillion dollars over 10 years, right? They do that a lot. They just did that relatively recently, at the very least, before the pandemic, I know, but to pay that massive contract to Anthony Rendon, they do that a lot. Matt Chapman's from Los Angeles. I'm not actually sure if he grew up an Angels fan or a Dodgers fan, but either of those teams could pay him a bazillion dollars and probably be better off with their third base situation. I don't know if the Dodgers want to have Max Muncy as their starting third baseman going forward. I mean, he's good, but is he as good as having Matt Chapman there? Maybe the Dodgers go out and sign both Chapman and Shohei. It's very possible. Maybe the Yankees sign Chapman. They could always use certainly a better everything these days. But I just feel like one of these big money teams in a big market city, not that Toronto is not, but just a team that can afford it is going to pay him a bazillion dollars. And to Aaron's point, you could probably not easily replace Chapman's production or defensive production, certainly, but you could try and replace it, depending on how confident you feel in, certainly I would think, or Elvis Martinez or Addison Barger, one of those two guys, especially now that DeJong is gone, David Schneider, probably your backup, for example, at second. I don't know. Schneider could certainly pay third as well. There are just a lot of internal options, to say the least, of another cheaper free agent like a Candelario, for example, which I'm sure it could also very well be in the cards. But yeah, if we're picking between the two of these guys, I'm definitely thinking it's going to be Whit Merrifield. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cellular device. Jeff calling in from Saskatoon. Jeff, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Show. It's great to be on with you. I'm actually calling from Saskatchewan, but my town is so small I didn't even name it because
what's it called?
20
what's it called?
People. A couple of thoughts. It's sure nice having so much swing and miss in our bullpen this year. I remember that short series with the Mariners last year, and you know, how come these other guys' teams have so many guys with 100 mile an hour velo and so much swing and miss? And yeah, that's been just awesome. But it's a bit of a hot take, but bear with me. If I had to pick one starter from the Jays to win one baseball game right now, looking at what I've seen all year, but particularly over the last 3 months, I've got to go with Kikuchi. I mean, Gausman's been a bit shaky, and I know he's your big name and your big guy. Like Bassett, he's susceptible to the long ball. Brios is good, but yeah, right now in terms of his swing and miss and where he's been at, you know, I'd be comfortable going with Kikuchi in a one game have to make the playoffs, or even in a game one scenario. And I'll listen to your thoughts on that. Great work, show. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks for calling in, Jeff. I appreciate you joining me from Saskatchewan. That is a hot take. I don't think I've heard anyone say that. Say that they'd take Kikuchi over Gossman in game one of like a potential playoff series, potential wild card series, let's say, which of course would be three games. I think a lot of the conversation around Kikuchi kind of focuses on, boy, is it a hot take to say you take Kikuchi in game two over Barrios, let's say? It is absolutely a hot take to say him, you take him over Gossman. See, I would still take Gossman only because Gossman has, I think, over a much, much, much longer period, dating back to his days as a Giant, proven that he is capable of getting it done in the biggest situations. I mean, heck, he got it done last year in the playoffs until the big explosion, or implosion, perhaps, is a better way of saying it. That's not to say Yusei Kikuchi is being in any way, shape, or form disrespected, because Kikuchi has been just phenomenal this year. Like, Kikuchi Fest is a regular occurrence on Jay's Talk because he has been so, so good. Whether Blair and Barker are hosting Kikuchi Fest or Ben Shulman and I are hosting it, whatever. It happens with a frightening regularity, and I would take it happening in the playoffs 1,000%. It's just, I think you probably set yourself up best to not have to go to the bullpen with Gossman. I do understand that there have been some recent blips. Don't get me wrong. Some recent blips absolutely have been there, but again, Kevin Gossman, I think his record's 9-7 on the year, but again, with Gossman, he has just shown the capability of being the ace in such a longer period of time, is why I probably wouldn't go away with it. Again, that is not a hot take, because that is, I think, what conventional wisdom would say. Let your ace take game one, put your best foot forward. But definitely the way Kikuchi has been pitching, I would absolutely, in a three-game series, he has to pitch at some point. Like, he definitely, whether your order is Gossman, Kikuchi, Barrios, or Gossman, Barrios, Kikuchi, I don't think there's a big, you know, argument one way or another. But if the Blue Jays did decide to put Kikuchi first, then I don't know. I'm not gonna argue too much, because he has been, we talk about filthy stuff in terms of heat from pitchers. I mean, we just talked about Jordan Hicks for a while. I mean, you say Kikuchi has been just as good. I'm very much looking forward to him going forward. Let's go back to the text line. 590-590, name and location. This one's funny. I like this one. Warren and Megan, they're from Brampton, but via Cincinnati. And they say, Warren, I guess it's from Warren. My daughter and I are in Cincy, and what a ride. These fans are passionate. It was nice to shut them down tonight. That's true. You know what? The crowd mics picked up a ton of noise. Like, and I'm not just talking about the fireworks, wherever the heck that was going on in Cincinnati, but the actual crowd, they were loud. Like, there was a point tonight, and Ben mentioned this on the broadcast, but there's a point where Brandon Williamson, the Reds starting pitcher, had to cup the PitchCom device. He had to put his glove over the PitchCom device, over his hat, like at the side of his head, to hear his own catcher over the noise of his own crowd. Like, they were really jacked up. So I it is nice, definitely, to get a win after a raucous Cincinnati crowd celebrated last night. But again, tonight, a 4-3 Blue Jays win. Ray from the Yukon says, I just wanted to commend the front office for sticking and putting their trust in their OG players, which undoubtedly brought them the win, and DFAing DeJong, who's brought us nothing offensively and a mediocre defense. He's been, I think, better than mediocre defensively, but the point is well taken in that they definitely stuck with guys like Espinal. And I mean, David Schneider, maybe not an OG guy, but Espinal, I think from reports I've heard, are that guys like Espinal and Biggio, very popular in the clubhouse. And now I know that should not be a reason to keep anyone over another guy. If player B is performing better than player A. Having said that, Espinal, you know, we kind of talked about it last night a little bit. Like, what do you want more? The bat of Espinal with the kind of decent glove of Espinal based on what we had seen for large parts of this season versus a better glove in DeJong, but certainly not a very good bat whatsoever. So, and it kind of felt like as the struggles for DeJong went on, you weren't going to see those options being picked up because they were like in the $12 million range for next year and the $15 million range for the year after. So again, with the whole Paul DeJong DFA thing, it is pretty fascinating because it strikes me as a bold move for an organization that doesn't always make such immediate moves. It kind of felt like if that were to have happened, it would have happened like in a week or 2 weeks or a month, for example. But hey, it happened now, and it allowed the Blue Jays to, I mean, they were going to make a move for someone to bring Bo Bichette back, but It was good to see them make a decisive move. I don't know that Paul DeJong's Blue Jays tenure is going to necessarily be viewed particularly highly, heralded, let's say. Like, it's maybe it's going to be viewed in the same breath as, like, Brad Hand's Blue Jays tenure, for example, which, honestly, if you'd ask me how many games he appeared in for the Blue Jays, I have no idea. I'm going to guess it's, like, less than 10, but it's going to be probably viewed in the same way. All right, you know what? Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll go back to the phones. We'll go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. Phones lines are still open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. And we'll also check out the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365 as well. More Jays talk on the other side of the break. They win 4-3 tonight in Cincinnati. Show Ali with you. Back in a flash on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I mean, looks like he didn't really miss 2 weeks, you know, at the plate. I don't think you really have to worry about that with Bo any time of the year. It could be December. But I think just having his presence there, you know what I mean? We string together a couple two-out knocks there with him being one of them, Barsh and Witt. It's just, you know, it's just nice to have him in the lineup for sure. It just puts pressure on the pitcher. He looked like he was, you know, kind of just rolling right along today.
That is John Schneider chatting with the media about the return of Bo Bichette, who finally came off the IL. As we discussed, the corresponding move was Paul DeJong being DFA'd, but Bo looking pretty good in his return from the injured list as the Blue Jays win 4-3 to even the series. The rubber match going tomorrow, first pitch just a little after 1:30 p.m. Eastern. It'll be Hunter Green for the Reds and Hyunjin Ryu, a very intriguing pitching matchup. You don't get a very such stark contrast in pitching matchups that often. So that's what we'll see on the mound tomorrow for both teams to wrap up this three-game series. Before we get back to the text and the phone lines, let's get to the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365. With Bet365, you can bet on things like player props, totals, or game outcomes across many different sports. 19-plus, play responsibly, Ontario only. So a lot of action that concerns the Blue Jays today, certainly Mariners and Astros. That game is still going on right now, but Mariners are up by a lot in the bottom of the ninth inning, despite this game being in Houston. The Rays did lose game one of their doubleheader to the Angels by a final score of 7-6. The New York Yankees got pummeled by the Boston Red Sox 8-1. In current action right now, the Rays are leading the Angels 2-0 in the bottom of the fourth inning. And the Orioles and Athletics, that game is in the fourth inning as well. That game's tied at 1. So with all that being said, so I guess these standings include the Rays' first win of the day. Pardon me, the Rays' first loss of the day. The Red Sox win and the Yankees loss. The Blue Jays win as well. These are the standings according to MLB.com. Baltimore is 75-47 entering play against Oakland. The Rays, in between games, I suppose, are 74-51. The Blue Jays are 68-56. The Boston Red Sox are 65-58. And the Yankees are 60-63 following their loss. And of course, as I mentioned, the Seattle Mariners and the Houston Astros playing each other right now. So of course, with a win, the Mariners are still going to stay ahead of the Blue Jays. They are up 10-3 right now in the bottom of the ninth inning. I think that game actually just went final. So it is a 10-3 win for the Mariners. I'm just going to read you this wild stat real quick before we get back to talking about Bo Bichette. But Julio Rodriguez, I don't know if this actually changed in the last couple of innings or not, but I saw that he had 4 hits today. 17 hits for Julio Rodriguez over his last 4 games. That is the most in modern MLB history. So since the year 1900 in a 4-game span like that, he is almost single-handedly powering the Mariners to wins. And to boot, I believe it was tonight, Framber Valdez was pitching for the Astros. He hits Jose Caballero with a pitch and the bench is clear. And I think there was some beef between Jose Caballero and like Martin Maldonado and Valdez. Like, I probably intentionally hit the guy on the foot or something. But in the video, you should go see it on Twitter or on social if you can find it. But the clip, you can see Valdez being held back, not by one of his own teammates, but by Julio Rodriguez, which is frankly kind of hilarious. But anyways, Mariners do win 10-3. So they are still ahead of the Blue Jays for that final wild card spot by half a game. Let's go back to that text line, 590-590, name and location. Jair from Cambridge. I once again think the manager took out the starting pitcher an inning early. Bass the Hound on the mound was good. He had only thrown 79 pitches. I don't mind them taking him out, knowing that after tomorrow there is an off day, knowing that you did want to get Trevor Richards some work. It did somewhat backfire because, again, Richards didn't look great today necessarily, but he has looked so good for so much of his outing this season. You kind of do kind of chalk that a little bit up to the little bit rustiness coming off of the neck inflammation returning from the IL. But 79 pitches is a little bit less than you would have expected facing the bottom of the order, especially after he managed to remain unscathed. But again, the Blue Jays do have a very good bullpen, and they're not afraid to go to the bullpen because they have been so good. This is a text from Ben in Toronto, i.e. Ben Shulman, who texted me this. He actually specifies after I chastised him yesterday. He said, my Texan of the day sent before the drive started. He says, Hicks definitely gets good results off the sweeper, but it feels like Hicks can sometimes just pump heaters until someone proves they can touch it, which is absolutely true. Hicks was dominant tonight, and I mean, I don't know if you're going to see him throw like 20 straight 103-mile-an-hour pitches. I don't know how good that could be for your arm, but at the same time, it is nice to see him go out there and continue to be dominant and bounce back, as we discussed before, after what happened yesterday. We heard John Schneider talk about Bo Bichette, and I did want to just get some Bo thoughts in there because his first AB, he laces a hard hit ball all the way down the right field line. It ends up just foul, and then he grounds out afterwards. Second AB pops up on a first pitch changeup. Third AB, he laces a ground ball right back up the middle for an RBI single off of Brandon Williamson. So Bo, part of the Blue Jays stringing together a bunch of two out hits, which is very good to see. Fourth AB, a shallow fly out to the infield. Like, he also moved around pretty well, I would think, for a guy who went right, like, he did not DH. He went right back in there as the starting shortstop, which is perhaps just as, if not more important, as his results at the plate tonight. So definitely very good to see. We did see the Tyler Stevenson single just get past his reach as he dove past the ball in the seventh, and then a bobble of the ball that perhaps otherwise would have been a double play a little bit after that. But you know what? For his first game back, like Schneider said, all things considered, I thought it was pretty good. I think it was pretty good. Let's hear a little bit more audio. Davis Schneider did discuss tonight the high fastball, because we saw a lot of high fastballs to Davis Schneider and some of those strikeouts. Of course, he did club a home run. Davis Schneider, I still think, as we discussed before with one of the callers, Davis Schneider, I think, proving the faith in him was well-placed. Let's hear a little bit from the guy who knocked in the game-winning run. Here's the rookie, Davis Schneider.
Yeah, I mean, I've always struggled with the fastball up. It's common knowledge at this point. I mean, even in the minor leagues, pitchers kind of threw me up. But, you know, I know that going into an at-bat. So, like, I just got to learn from it. And if they throw it up, yeah, I either got to foul it off or just kind of take it. Because, you know, as long as I can foul it off, then pitchers are bound to make a mistake down. And that's where I kind of do my damage.
Yeah, so major league ABs from Davis Schneider. Again, I don't know how much playing time he is necessarily going to get going forward, because if you have your regular outfield in there, then maybe, you know, the need for Whit Merrifield to be in the outfield is a little bit less. You can have him in the infield, which means that Davis Schneider probably not going to play as much, but hey, Davis Schneider is still playing very well. Also, if you missed this from earlier, Keegan Mathison, MLB.com, tweeting this out. George Springer was not in the lineup last night and was not again in the lineup today because of a jammed ankle. That's what he said. It was a jammed. That's what John Schneider said. The quote was, he jammed his left ankle pretty good. So that was the explanation as to why no Springer yesterday and today. He was available. Obviously, they did not expect an IL stint. So that's always good. But BNS, Ben Nicholson Smith of Sportsnet, also clarifying that the jammed left ankle occurred when he had stepped awkwardly on first base versus the Phillies just a couple days ago. So that's where that stems from. So you're hoping that it's not too serious, and we do see him sometime soon. We have a couple minutes left here. Before we go, let's hear from one last member of the Blue Jays who spoke to the media today, Chris Bassitt. We talked about him already. Six innings pitched from Bassitt, and three hits, three runs, two of which were earned, six strikeouts. A lot of early success. Let's hear what Bassitt had to say about facing the Reds.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But at the same time, they'll also go off tendencies a little bit. And again, just I would attack a couple of their hitters completely differently. But overall, it's a learning experience for me and them. So yeah, it's fun.
So I think the question Bassitt was asked was, was the success in part due to facing a very, very young lineup, a lineup that just has not seen a lot of major league pitching over the course of their relatively young careers, because of course there are a lot of guys who just got called up for the first time this year. And he did look, I mean, three perfect innings to start the game. That's the first time through the order. He looked phenomenal. So again, he did get beat up a little bit when TJ Friedl came up in his very second AB blast a home run to make it 3-1. And then all the craziness with the inside the park, not inside the park home run, the triple and the error, but still it is interesting to hear Bassett, who was usually pretty humble. He declined to say any accepting any major praise, but hey, six innings pitch, just two earned runs. I think you take that. I see here, Kate in Vancouver just says, I want to talk about DeJong. Super surprised he was DFA'd. It needed to happen, but what a waste of a good pitching prospect. Do you think it was worth it to have a good couple weeks of better shortstop defense than Espinal? You know what? I do think it was worth it, only because it was the right move at the time. Just because DeJong, like, the metrics probably did grade out to say that DeJong wasn't going to be a world beater, but I don't know that the metrics also graded out to say that he was going to be that poor offensively. Ultimately, I'm not sure. I don't think it was a huge swing to send the guys away that they did. So I still, even if it didn't work out that great, I'm not sure anything of value was lost that much. Hey, everyone, thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Crown Rust Protection. New and used vehicle prices are rising and inventory is scarce. Avoid the hassle of buying prematurely by making your vehicle last longer with Crown Rust Protection. For a special summer offer on rust protection, visit crown.com today. For Ben Shulman, Blake Murphy, Tom Young, and Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. We're out of here. A very intriguing pitching matchup tomorrow sees Hyunjin Ryu versus Hunter Green. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm back to wrap up the series with a rubber match tomorrow. I'll talk to you then.